Definitely needs more cowbell. Might have to work on that. Hello, hello, and welcome to Moe's Paisley... whatever it is. It's the Paisley, Penny Arcade. That's what it is. Just my mind is swirling. I had some technical difficulties that if I hadn't said anything, you never would have known it, but... my mind is addled. Of course, my whole life has been one addled brain. But how are ya? Today is Wednesday, the 12th of March, 2025. That's right, today is 1-2-day, or 12-day, or the 12th day, and it's the 2 days before, 3 days before the Ides of March. Beware the Ides of March. That's right, Julius Caesar. If you remember your Sheikh al-Kabir... that's an inside joke. If you're an Egyptian, you know that. That's what my parents used to joke about that. Not that I am an Egyptian by heritage. I'm an American by everything just about else. But, culturally, there was that. I was raised, some people were raised by wolves. I was raised by Egyptians. But they talk about Shakespeare. Some people call them Sheikh al-Kabir, which means, the big sheikh, the real smart guy there. But the Ides of March, that was the augur who said to him, beware the Ides of March. And that's when he was shanked in the Senate. That's right. Didn't work out so well for him. How are you? I hope you're doing well. I just had a hectic time here, but got everything worked out. It just like magic suddenly went, Mo, we've got you all worked up over nothing. I like to play with your affections, toy with you a bit, get you all worked up and out, and now everything's just fine. Like to mess with you. That's what the universe does. That's what the little gremlins do. Gremlins. So I hope you've been well. It's been an interesting week for me. I'm working on things, projects. I like projects. And I like to project. Project from the mask. Project from the mask. Remember, Mo, project from the mask. Project to the furthest in the person in the end of the room, the furthest place in the room. Listen, if you listen to this show, it's weird. It just gets weird. Because I am weird. And I don't think I'm getting weirder. Maybe a little less coherent. I don't know about weirder. Oh, God. Yay. I just spent a lot of time outside with the dear puppy. And that's always such fun. Oh, my God, is she fun. She was a little bit, my ball today. I'll let you have it a few times. Just, listen, old man. Here's the ball. Play with it a few times. That's it. Now it's my ball. She has this ball, and she loves the ball. It's just like, there are two balls that are exactly alike. They actually came as a set. Two of them, but of the two, there is one that is very special to her. We call it, well, my wife named it the ESB, the emotional support ball. And I don't know how she tells the difference, but it smells different, or anatomically it has a different structure, or it just has a different isotope or something, because it's not quite the same. And that's the one. That's the ESB. And it's quite phenomenal. Boy, she is just, what a lovely creature. Oh, my goodness. I am just so smitten. And I'm smitten with all creatures, kind of, mostly, you know. Even serpents are beautiful, but you keep your distance. Keep your distance. I've actually handled them in the past. One of the most beautiful creatures I ever saw in my life was a copperhead that an insane Cajun had grabbed alive on the side of the road while he was biking to the vet school where my dad was teaching, and took him to my father, said, "Hey, Doc, what do you think of this?" My father said, "It's thrashing, trying to bite you." He said, "Well, we learned to handle these from the time we're young, but it was one of the most beautiful things I have ever seen in my life." And because it was so angry, it was just bright, bright, brightly colored. Unbelievable. Animals are amazing. I really am. Maybe I should have been a vet. I don't know. But they have to do things I don't think I would like to do, quite frankly. And I just don't think that that would be in my wheelhouse, as they say. Wheelhouse. Yeah. That's what they do say. Remember, once I was lost in San Francisco, and I ended up right next to where the cable cars kind of have their main cables and their big wheels. And I wondered if that was a wheelhouse, but I don't think it was. But boy, that was something. Noisy, loud, and should have been guarded, I thought. But here I was, a young ne'er-do-well. And I was not a bad guy. I was a good guy. But I thought, man, shouldn't someone be watching over this? It was just kind of open. There's this big pocket-a-pocket-a machine, you know, and these gigantic wheels and just this, man, it was fantastic. I thought, this is what makes it all work. And this is why they're called cable cars, because there are these huge cables. Yeah. Something about that city. I love that city. Even though I hear it's way too expensive, but then again, I have never had any money, so living there would be the same now as it would have been back then. You know, it's my area of dumpster. You stay away from this. Yeah. So how's the world treating you? How is the world in general? If you were listening to CA's show yesterday, which I was upon, I wasn't upon it, I was just on it. It was a good show. It really was. We talked about the eclipse coming up this coming week. It's going to be a doozy, I think. And I'm usually one to say, don't watch eclipses, which is something that I never really paid much attention to until recently, last few years. Eclipses are powerful. They send out rays, and those rays can be remarkably, I'm not going to say good nor bad, but they can be malevolent at times. Some can be. I don't think this one's going to be a nasty one. I've seen lots of them in my lifetime because they happen all the time. You know, there's two or three a year. It doesn't always mean you're going to be able to see them because they're not always within your area, wherever you may be. This one, if you're in the continental United States, it's fun to say, will be available for you to see. It'll be late Friday night, early Saturday morning. So you can check your local weather person, or time and date. Timeanddate.com will give you all the information you need. Trust me. It's a great site, and it's free.com. Not free.com, it's timeanddate.com. A lot of good information there. But I cast a chart for the eclipse, and I'm sure CA had too, and we had a nice discussion. So if you're interested in that, you go to 12radio.com, and then you go to On Demand, and you go to CA Brooks. C.A. Brooks. And I'm sure it's up there. And you can listen to yesterday's show, because I was even quite awake. It took me about a year and 3 months, but I finally kicked my caffeine habit, at least the dependency. Not that I don't still have a little bit of caffeine every now and then, not a lot, but I don't have it in the quantities that I used to. But so I was actually awake and perky and even could think properly. So that was a pretty good show, I think. We always have a good show. I enjoy her company all the time, even though we're in different states. Hers is one of awareness. Mine is of complete stupor, a state of stupor. And they call me Stuperman, but that's a different story. So it's going to be a fascinating eclipse, and I think its effect is going to be felt by those who are aware. It's a very spiritual eclipse. I'll talk about it for a little bit here, because I'd like to talk about the personal growth aspect of things. Personal growth is very important to me, because when I was studying metaphysics, the occult, as we used to call it, and a lot of people think the word occult, because usually there is the accent on the cult part of it, is cultish, and it is not. That happens not to be part of the word. I did most of all my studying by myself. I did not join any groups. I did not take any classes, because quite frankly, there was nothing to join. There were no classes to take. Like in The Walrus and the Carpenter, there were no clouds to fly. No birds were flying overhead. There were no birds to fly, you know. No clouds were in the sky. It just didn't exist, because it was not the time. And in the small college town I was in, anything that was being taught, anything that was being done, was so incredibly secretive because of the conservative nature of where I lived. So consequently, that was the name of that tune, as they say. So what we're talking about here is a path of self-knowledge. Now, we talked about that on the show yesterday, and I do urge you, if you're interested, to listen to that show, because a lot of the themes that I may pick up here, little stitches, as it were, along the path, are covered in this, in that, and therein. But we talked about the hermit, as a theme. And I mentioned the concept of what the hermit is about. And the hermit is about the path of self-study. May not have put it that way, but that is one of the aspects of what the hermit is about. Why? Because the hermit seeks its own path. The Hermit in Tarot, which is numbered 9 in the Major Arcana, and is Arcana. Listen to me. I say. the Arcana. Anyway, it's ruled by Virgo. And Virgo, of course, is a very precise and very meticulous sign. My buddy who just died in February was a Virgo, and very much a Virgo. My mom was a Virgo, and very much a Virgo. And you get to know Virgo energy, and you learn to respect it for what it is. And it can have its downfalls, but it can have its benefits as well, you know. So there's some fascinating aspects to that Virgo energy. But in Tarot, the concept of the hermit, for example, in my tarot deck, which with these new tariffs, I think is probably going to cost about $8,000 to $9,000. I think you'd probably buy a new car cheaper than my new car is going to cost $1 billion, I'm sure. I don't know. I have no idea how this is working or how it's going to work. I don't understand any of it, as is evidenced by my life. But that's a different story altogether. So my hermit card is Captain Ahab from Moby Dick, Captain Ahab of the Pequod. And the reason I chose that is because he is a hermit. He takes no one's advice. He is seeking his own path. And it is a spiritual path, but it is one of spiritualized anger, hatred, and vengeance, which is possible. People do make that their hermitage. They seek out some sort of warped sense of spirituality based upon whatever it is that they seek. It is possible to spiritualize anything, and I mean absolutely anything. It is. Take my word for it. I've been involved in this world of metaphysics for a very long time, ever since I was a little teeny bopper, you know? And I've seen just about all of it. When I went to California right out of high school in 72, I met a lot of people who were into a lot of strange spiritual things. And many of them had been through the Haight-Ashbury thing 5 years earlier or so, 5 or 6. And they had come out the other side, chewed up and spat out. And their spiritual heads were, how to put this, weird. Not weird, I mean, to each their own, but, I mean, for example, at Berkeley, they had a class in witchcraft. Some guy was getting a PhD in that, and I thought, well, that's perfect. I will stay here and get that. And then it turned out it was just for that one, like, period. You know, it's like, drat, double drat. I would love to have done that. But that was cool. That was California in the early 70s. It changed, of course. What I did find out is that anything metaphysical, what we would call today metaphysical, what they called then the occult, was pretty hot potato-ish. It was, let's keep our hands off of this. Because out of a lot of that had come the Church of Satan with Anton Zandor LaVey and his crowd. And it had taken a very negative turn because, not that this is what they were, but they were seen as hedonists who were using spirituality to get a free ride. I'm not saying that's what they were. That was just how they were portrayed. And just because you live a hedonistic lifestyle, now I'm not saying they did that, but just because you live a hedonistic lifestyle does not mean you are a hedonist. There can be spirituality attached to that, I guess. Aleister Crowley's organization, the Order of Thelema, which a guy named Jack Parsons was a member of. He been down in Pasadena with the jet, I think it was Pasadena, with the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He worked there and so on and so forth. And there was a young fella who was the secretary of their group, and his name was L. Ron Hubbard. And he splintered off after having seen what they were doing with the Thelemic Order. And maybe it was the OTO. I'm maybe getting things mixed up. But he was part of it, this young guy named L. Ron Hubbard. And he started his own thing, as you may know, and that's Scientology. And it was spiritualized something or the other. I don't pretend to know what it was. I just don't. I was in New Orleans, or was I in San Francisco? I don't remember which it was, but they had people out on the sidewalk saying, would you like to come in and, you know, would you like to experience, I can't even remember what the spiel was, and it was the Scientologist, and I'd never heard of it, never heard of it. And I was young, I was 18, 19 years old. It was San Francisco. And they said, would you like to come in and, you know, learn how to use your whole brain? That was the spiel. Would you like to learn to use your whole brain? And I said, sure. You know, because they said Einstein used only 1/10 of his brain or 1/5 of his brain or something. And so I went in, they sat me down, they had me hold these things, these electric things, I guess, these metal things. They were like, just like, you know, dowels, but they were metal. And then they asked me questions and had me talk and this and that. And essentially at the end of it, they kicked me out. You know, they said, oh, we don't want you. They were nicer than that, but they were very sweet. But they said, okay, you're fine. They didn't want me. And I thought, oh, that's okay. That's really weird. I never did find out why or what the deal was. And eventually I got to know a Scientologist, not well, but well enough to say, why wouldn't they want me? And he was evasive about it. And eventually kind of, you know, sidled away, and I, not forever, but just like, I couldn't figure out what the deal was. I still don't know what the deal is. Maybe too many thetans or whatever that case may be. But so there, you can spiritualize anything when you stop and think about the Druids. I'm very fond of Druidism. I consider it to be a wonderful, it's nature, but they spiritualized trees. They really did, because they considered trees to be ancestors, and they're not the only ones. In Africa, trees were ancestorized, the belief that a tree was actually an ancestor. And what they would, I won't get into what they did. It's a little gruesome, so I won't get into that. But this, and today, what are we doing? There are some organizations that when someone dies, they take the body and they put it in the ground and they plant a tree above it. And that's very similar to kind of some of the beliefs that the Druids had, except that they believed that the person was actually a tree and that the wisdom of that person was within the tree. And we hear about the Nemean copse, you know, the Nemean orchard, where that was actually the trees were wise. And they, I mean, there's these brilliant concepts of let's spiritualize everything. Let's spiritualize everything. So there is this world of this incredible concept of spirituality. And so Ahab spiritualizes his hatred for Moby Dick. You may not know that the reason he hated Moby Dick so badly was because on a previous whaling jaunt, on a hunt, Ahab was a harpooner. And it's my belief in the book that Ahab is half Egyptian, at least, because Melville says it. You can find it right there in the book. It's right there. Melville says that he is an Egyptian. And people overlook that. It's right there in his great Egyptian chest, he says. And I thought, well, yeah, my brother's name is the Arabic version of Ahab. And they give some reason as to why, but Ahab means beloved. And I just love that, you know, in Arabic anyway. It doesn't in the version they give, but that's neither here nor there. And it makes perfect sense because all the harpooners, or the harpooners, in Moby Dick are Stubb was a harpooner, but they're not Christians per se, you know, just not. One's a Native American, one he's not a Maori, but he's close to there in the islands. He's a Pacific Islander, he's a cannibal. That's Queequeg, you know, and one is named Fadala, and he's a Parsi, you know, and I mean, it's just fascinating stuff, you know. One is an African, and he's real. It's beautifully, but here's the point. What we see with is the hermit, and here's another aspect of the hermit. Saint Anthony was a hermit, And he's the paradigm for the hermit in Tarot, because Tarot is made up of saints, because Tarot was designed as a game, pure and simple. It was not designed as something for divination. And for those of you who don't believe that, go back and read your history of these things, because what it was is that the divination came later. I mean, you can use anything for divination. You can use dice, you can use coins, as in the I Ching, you can use yarrow stalks, as in the I Ching. What happens is that you have something solid, which is basically a mythology, and the mythology is based upon stories that connect to humanity. And those human stories are very important, right? And it's the human stories behind that oracle that tell the tale. And the human stories for the Tarot is basically the Old and New Testament. There it is. So if you know that, I had to read it. You know, the first time I read it, I was 18, because I got a Bible in an old at a Motel 6. You know, it was a, it was the Motel Bible, you know, Gideon's. And that's why they put them there. So I was fine. I was with my parents. But I read it and I was fascinated. I said, oh, this is what this book's all about. Because it wasn't our culture. Not that I'd read the other book, mind you. But I'd seen many Davies and Goliath. You probably don't know what that's. Maybe you do know what that's about. It's an old person thing. But and I was fascinated and hooked. And I mean hooked. Now, I'd read Norse mythology and Greek mythology and Roman mythology and every mythology I'd get my teeth into, ancient Egyptian mythology. And I hadn't read much New World mythology, but I've kind of gotten into that a little bit. And you realize that these stories of human beings are fascinating. And the story about St. Anthony is he just got fed up with people and society and culture. Sound familiar? I feel that way every now and then, especially after watching the news. And you just say, I need to find... So here's the deal about spirituality and the hermit. And the reason I'm mentioning the hermit is because in the Vedic system, and the Vedic system of astrology simply mirrors the actual night sky. That's what happens. So, for example, in the Western system, this eclipse, the moon will be eclipsed in the Western system in Libra. But it's not actually going to be in the constellation of Libra, which looks very much like what it's supposed to be, which is scales. You look up at the sky and you can actually say, oh, yeah, there's scales. But that's not where it'll be. It will be in Libra, which doesn't look much like a virgin if you look up there. But in Virgo, it will be in Virgo. Okay, so because of the precession of the equinox. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, since we equate that in Tarot with the hermit, we think about that concept of being alone and the hermit seeking what? Well, St. Anthony was seeking his own spiritual life, his own spiritual guide, because he knew he couldn't get it where he was. Because it was too, you read the story about St. Anthony, you know, in the Book of Saints. There are books of saints. Look it up online. Now, in the I Ching, there are six lines to a hexagram. The first line represents the farmer, the peasant, the hard worker. The second line is the local bureaucrat, right? The fellow who kind of in the village that you go to when you need something, whatever. The third line is the warrior, the general, the person who protects people. The fourth line is the temple bureaucrat. You know, might be the local eunuch, the person who, you know, takes care of the government stuff. Can be either a good guy or kind of a not a good guy, right? The fifth guy is usually the prince. Might be the emperor, might not be. You kind of see that. And the sixth line is the sage, who has left society and gone out to wander to find truth, to find those things, see, that they need. So what we see is this is a cultural sort of idea. The so-called architect of the Great Pyramid of Khufu, known as Cheops to the Greeks, and a lot of society. It was a fellow named Imhotep. Imhotep, which means basically gift, walking gift. Imhotep, great stories about him. And a magician named Dada F. I love that too, Dada F. Anyway, so the idea is that these people, they kind of wander in and out of society. You know, they're just like Merlin. Merlin, who gets younger all the time, which I've always thought was a wonderful explanation of what we used to call senility. You know, someone who becomes less coherent as they get older. You know, starts out very wise, but gets younger and younger and younger as they get older. I mean, that is kind of brilliant, don't you think? Don't you think? I do. Sad, but I mean, I just think that kind of covers it. So we have an opportunity to, during this next period, and let's call it, I would say, 6 months. So between now, this is the third month, and so that would be until September, or even longer, or how about the rest of your life, to find your path. And to do so by yourself. Now, do not mean by any stretch of the imagination, not without using other people. Okay, now, you have your, since you're listening to this 1-2 radio show, you have this 1-2 radio thing. There's also just one, there's 1-2 Academy. Now, I know that there are a couple of classes being taught there. I think I looked, I saw three. Kat is teaching a couple of classes. Kelly Whetstone, I think, is teaching a class. These are people who have been teaching for a long time. I used to teach a ton of classes there. My wife's health is not very good, so I have kind of taken a huge step back in order to be more present with her during this period of time, because her health is not great, and she kind of needs me around. So that's what I'm doing. And otherwise, I'd be teaching, because I love teaching. To be honest with you, I miss it so much. I just love teaching. I taught classes on all sorts of divination, dice divination, cards divination, playing cards divination, tarot divination, my specific tarot deck divination, and people took the classes, and I love teaching them. The Om, which is also, you know, that's a lovely form of divination that is an old Celtic divination. I taught the runes, I taught, you name it, I taught it because I got off on spreading the word. Now, so here's what I'm going to tell you. Take whatever you're going to, on this path of self-teaching, there is no such thing as self-teaching. You're going to learn. Now, what I did, since I didn't have the benefit, first of all, of having any money whatsoever, I was always broke. I always. I have Mars in my second house in the Vedic, in Sag. And so what that means is basically, you know, and I didn't learn Vedic, in, you know, until about 30 years ago. I mean, it's been longer than that, 31 to 33, something like that. And I went, oh, that's why. Right. That's why. So you look at it and you say, well, then that's all right, I guess. And so what I had to do was improvise, and there was no internet. So I would hit the library and I would just find the sources or find the resources wherever I could and do whatever I could and talk to people and learn and learn and learn and learn. And if you have an opportunity to learn from somebody, learn. Don't hesitate. Learn. Do whatever you can. And if you find yourself motivated, if you're in a bookstore, I found this to be true. I would be in a bookstore and I would see a book and I would get this little ding, right? Ding. And it would be to buy a book. And I would think, why do I want to buy this book? And I would find myself instantly, you know, well, it's kind of expensive or, you know, but I would think there's something in there that I need. and I would buy it. And honest to goodness, it might have been 5 years or 15 years or 50. And I needed exactly what was in that book. Follow your intuition on that. The path of knowledge is a wonderful one. And it's a spiral journey. You're going to go over it again and again and again, but you never hit the same path twice. It's a spiral. It may look the same, but it's never the same road twice. It's similar, but not the same. So you have to be motivated. What is your motivation? Thirst. Thirst. Hunger. Hunger and thirst. The knowledge itself is its own reward. There is no final destination when it comes to knowledge. It's saying, I gotta know this stuff. For me, it was always a constant desire to know more, to understand more. I had the good luck of running into Aleister Crowley's deck around 1975. And boy, the first time I saw the cards, it's something I'll never, ever forget as long as I live. I saw those cards and I was completely overwhelmed. Overwhelmed. And a druid is the one who showed me the cards. And he wasn't a New World druid, not by any stretch of the imagination. And he was just this side of being completely out of his mind. God bless him. He was a great friend for a little bit of time. He was someone who should never have wandered into my sphere of friends because they were extremely skeptical. They had accepted me completely as authentic, and they knew me. They had certainly put me through what they considered to be a ringer, but I never hid anything. I never made claims. They just knew me to be who I was. And when he came in, they just really, you know, and he was not a phony, not by any stretch of the imagination. He was incredibly genuine and had great skills. Great skills. Huh. And he ignited something within me that changed my life. And I probably did something for him that changed his life. Whether it was for the better or for the worse, I will never know. I hope it was for the better. But he had to completely and totally bail on me and everything else for quite a while. He was something. I should write about him sometime. And sooner than later, I would have a sense that that would be worth doing because he was a good person. He just was not understood, as magicians rarely are understood. People don't understand Aleister Crowley at all. Not at all. Not at all. Never. They just don't get him. They don't get him. And they haven't gotten him, and they didn't understand him at the time. He had a wicked sense of humor. He was not a wicked man, and Winston Churchill called him the wickedest man alive. And certainly Churchill may have understood him better than most, since he didn't have him hanged for being a triple agent, a double agent. He was probably a triple agent for the British. But magicians are rarely understood. And not everyone knows who is a magician, but they think they do. And there are people who think themselves to be magicians who, frankly, are not. And people who charge to be magicians who are not. It's quite a conundrum. It truly is. It truly is. It's a really startling sort of thing because magic is not what people they you know. I was talking to someone who is probably a magician, and he was carping about the Harry Potter movies and, you know, and the book and how it did such a disservice to the concept of magic. And I said, on what continent, on what universe, it's done more for the whole concept than anything else I can think of, because it is, it really has made it less obvious as to what it is, and thus made it safer for those who are truly practitioners, you know. In the old days, back in ancient Egypt, magic was everywhere. Animism, you know, where there was a spirit everywhere. That was the true idea of what magic was. That was the real concept of what a magical force was. And that is closer to the truth, even though modern practitioners probably don't believe in it quite that way. But there is a truth to that idea, that there is real... It's everywhere. It's everywhere. You just have to understand the connections, you know? Understand the connective tissue between cause and effect, action and reaction. And once you do, once you realize that, boy, when I say that love is the most powerful force in the world, I mean it. I mean it. And when I say that you have to be compassionate and that you have to be able to show that love and to focus on it, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. And yes, the world is in trouble to a certain extent, but love is the answer. And when I say that, there's a reason for that. And it's very to the point. That's why I'm an optimist. That's why I'm an optimist, because what happens to people? What do? They fall in love. Look who's trying to rule the world. All these old guys, mainly men. There are women involved too, but mainly it's men, you know? And they get older and they lose their sense of compassion. And they lose their sense of dynamic interplay with nature. You know, I'm getting off field, but so on your path, it's very important that you develop this sense of desire for the excitement of the journey itself. You just want to, it's like taking a hike. You know, if you want to take a hike, and your hike is going to be, I want to get to that peak. Well, you're going to miss a lot of things, probably, if you're just focused on the peak itself. If you just say, I don't really know where I want to go. I just want to kind of follow this path, or just kind of walk in this field and see what I see. And I want to smell the air as I'm doing it, and I want to feel the temperature around me, and is there humidity, is there not humidity, is there any flora and fauna to really look at? Do you see what I'm getting at? It's about life. The value of life itself is undeniably one of the most powerful things that we have, that billions of people before us and billions of people to come do not have right now. We're here. And no matter how helpless we feel, no matter how out of sorts we may feel at the moment, no matter how put upon, no matter how victimized, we've got life. And I think that that's something that a lot of people don't realize. They don't realize we're here. And there are things that we can do. And they don't have to be, you know, picking up a sign or picking up a crowbar or picking up it doesn't have to be anything. It can be as simple as picking up an idea. Or closing your eyes and focusing on a concept and using that concept to move energy inwards. Learn to meditate. Pick up a book. Practice. And here's the other side of this. It takes diligence. Most of this stuff doesn't come easily because it's not meant to. Well, I shouldn't put it that way. Some things are very easy. In parts of the world, they teach three-year-olds to meditate. I mean, there are types of meditation that they teach people, adults, and they charge them $1,500 to learn. You want to learn this? Fine. Fork over $1,500 and I'll teach you to do this. Okay. $1,500. Here you go. Right. Yet, in other parts of the world, they teach kids to do it. Kids. And the kid can do it, which you wouldn't think a three-year-old could meditate. But they can teach three-year-olds to meditate. And that kid can do it for the rest of their life. Okay? Does that kid become a super genius? Not necessarily. Do they never have problems? Not necessarily. The point is that they learn to release stress, and it does help them to move past certain obstacles that those who don't might experience. Now, I'm always reminded of the famous magician Doug Henning. I think it was in the 70s. He was a big deal. He was really a big deal. I think he was Canadian. And he would, you know, he would do his magic, and he was kind of a young hippie, you know. I mean, he was really, he had a lot of energy, and he would go, now, and things would change. And I loved him. I thought he was just a lot of fun. And he was a big transcendental meditation guy. And he died of cancer at a very early age. And people said, well, if it's such a big deal, how come he died of cancer? And it's like, well, wait a minute. You see, we equate things weirdly. But he was following his path, and he was fine with it. And we have to not equate one thing with the other. The two had nothing to do with each other. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. We have to learn to view spirituality as its own thing. It's very important. We have to view our spirituality as our own path. Our own path. And here's the other part of that. Captain Ahab on the Pequod, when people signed up, they were signing up for their own doom, their own demise. They didn't know that. They had no idea. But he did. He knew that he was going out to get Moby Dick or go down trying. Well, Moby Dick is nature. Moby Dick is the emperor of the seas. See? And if I ever do a Moby Dick deck, which I do contemplate, then I would, you know, it would be a pretty good deck. I know that. I already have most of the cards mapped out in my head. It's nothing else in my head, so there's plenty of room for these things. And that would be the emperor. And Moby Dick isn't mad. He's not malicious. As Aleister Crowley said, nature we have to watch out because there are blind forces of nature, you see. You can't blame nature for what nature does. It simply is Newton's laws, right? Newton's laws. They are immutable, the immutable laws of nature. They don't change. They are what they are. Someday we'll discover the reasons for certain things. See, I believe that there is no such thing as the supernatural. So what we do, everything is natural, including ghosts and, you know, I believe in Sasquatch. I think they're out there. Why not? Would you want to be a part of this? God almighty. Can you imagine Sasquatch just saying, say, Harry, yeah, Fred, what do you think? You want to go be a part of that world? Let's wait till Trump's out of office, shall we? Okay. So, you know, it's like, what are we, what are we, these things will all be understood because it's all natural. There is no supernatural. It's all pretty wonderful stuff. And there are people who have the ability to tune in a little bit better than others, or a lot better than others. So you find people in this world who have something. You get readings, you take classes, whatever it is. If you find someone who's hungry, and I'm still starving, then you take a class from them if it's available. I'll be teaching eventually someday, I predict. If there is a God, God willing. And who knows? See, I feel it's hubris to even say there is or isn't. I do. You know, who am I to say? I know, I've seen ghosts, so I know they exist. That I know. But I don't know what that means. That's all natural to me. That's nature. I've seen tornadoes, so I know they exist too. In Arabic, they call them fesiat el afrit, which means genie farts, you know? ghost farts, quite literally. Fesiat el afrit. Ghost farts. I love that. And usually those are the little dust devils that we see, you know, out in the desert. Not that I'm out there in the desert. I'm not. I'm, you know, Colorado. But I always love that. I love that. So get hungry, because this path is the one path that I guarantee you will never bore you. I have books and books and books and books and books that I've had for years and years and years and years. And when I begin to get a little bit, you know, when I begin to get that wanderlust in me, I just zap to another book and bammo, I'm there. I'm there. You'll never be bored. Boredom is the worst thing there is to a human being. Ennui is the most dreadful feeling, and it can sap the energy out of the most vibrant of us. Be careful. Depression, oh my God. Don't be depressed. Learn. Learn. Don't get. I remember when I turned 60 something and I said, oh, really? Do I need to? Why am I going to do this? Do I have any time left? And I realized, what in the hell is wrong with me? I want to learn until the moment I take my last breath. God willing. See? I must believe in something. Oh, I definitely believe in something. I hope all those myths are right. I would love to see a lot of people again. All my dogs. All my dogs. Oh. And all a lot of people again. Some people, not so much. Not so much. I'm such an easygoing guy. Even if I had a chance to tell people off, I probably wouldn't do it. I would just say, well, it's nice to see you again. I hope you're doing okay. And I don't want anyone to really suffer. You know? I don't believe in that. I don't believe in wishing others problems. I want everyone to be okay. Even people who are doing terrible things right now, what I wish for them is clarity, to go, holy cats, I just fired 2,000 people? Fired them, which means they can't collect unemployment? After they've done exemplary jobs for 15 years in a job, and oh my God, and I'm so sorry. Here's your job back. No. All I want for them is to say, what a jerk I'm being. And then I dream about unicorns and candy canes. And so, start. Take some classes. The classes, by the way, at 1-2 Academy were always designed to be reasonable. And they are reasonable. They are reasonable. I always said, would I be able to afford a class for $30 a week? And I decided, yeah. $30, $35, yes, I could. And I couldn't do much more than that, but I could do that much. Maybe I could. If I had a job. Yeah, a horrifying job. A horrifying idea. So, anyway, take advantage of what you have and enjoy this path. Every now and then I'll probably bring it up because it's important to me. This is a wonderful journey we're on. Let's enjoy it together. I may be specific coming up. Who knows? I may start talking about things since I can't teach officially because I'm supposed to be, you know, less available but more available, if you know what I mean. All right. Well, I love you so much, and I wish you the best, and I wish you peace and love. Till next week. Bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.